Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Can Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Can, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And today, I'll be chatting with Jason Lincoln Jeffers, author of The Next Human, A Guide to Personal and Collective Evolution. I was reading Jason's book, and he has a whole chapter about the zero-point self. And I've been hearing a lot of this buzzword, zero-point, you know, zero-point energy, zero-point wands, zero-point necklaces, you know. And it seems to be something like good. But the thing is, I think most of us are kind of clueless as to what exactly is this zero-point thing mean and what does this zero-point self mean. So I thought, why not talk to one of the experts? So my friend and spiritual teacher, Jason Lincoln Jeffers, is going to be discussing with us today the power of collective consciousness and what it means for every single one of us, and how becoming the zero-point self releases us from being bound to suffering, and how humanity is evolving into this zero-point, and what does this actually mean for each of us individually and collectively. And I did want him to speak a little bit about religion as well, and what that can mean for spiritual growth, and even possibly how it can hamper us, because I certainly was extremely religious when I grew up, and then went kind of away from it, kind of had a breakdown myself, and then came back to spirit through my own illness. And so I wanted him to speak a little bit about that as well. So thank you so much, Jason, for joining us.
No, thank you, Karen. It's an honor to be with you again and to speak to your wonderful listening audience about the message of our new book called The Next Human.
Yes, Jason, you know, I think it's your book is like a Bible book. I don't want to sound religious, but, you know, there's so many pieces in there. And I don't know whether when you began writing your book, whether you knew it was going to be however many pages it is, because it's a pretty big book. Because I know when I was starting to write mine, I had no idea it was going to end up being 420 pages.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was just kind of, the book kind of wrote itself, and I had no clue as to how big it was going to be or anything like that. So, yeah, there's just a lot of information in it, and we're very, very happy with the way it turned out.
Oh, yeah, that's great. It's congratulations. You know, it's a beautiful book, and I've recommended it to so many people. And since the last radio show we did, which was about supporting indigo and crystal individuals, children and adults, that's really expanded on my life, and I have since began mentoring a handful of 20-somethings, I call them. I call them my kids, even though I don't have my own kids, and the mentoring has been wonderful. We've gotten this wonderful group of young people together and getting to a place of feeling now connected to each other like a tribe, and everyone's healing, you know, and it's so wonderful and so fulfilling. I can't have children for whatever reason, and I just feel like I'm not missing anything anymore. Like, I have these kids, and mm-hmm. I feel like completely fulfilled. So I really have you to thank you for opening my eyes and understanding this whole phenomenon. So, thank you. wonderful appreciation.
Thank you for sharing that. It's an honor to send them the book. I know you requested books. Autograph books for all six
secret.
Of them. And so, uh-oh.
I'm just kidding. It's okay.
Uh-oh. Oh, well.
That's okay.
Maybe they're not listening today.
Yeah, probably not. So let's go on to our topic today. So we hear a lot of this buzzword, zero point, you know, and a lot of people are selling products that help people, I guess, get to something, some zero point energy place or pain relief or whatever it is. So maybe from your perspective, what are we talking about today? What is this zero point self that you mention about in your book?
Sure. Well, the zero point is simply a reference from science that it calls the singularity of a black hole a zero point space in time, and when a star collapses, the death of the star and the transformation of that star into a black hole, where the star eventually collapses into infinite density, infinite temperature, infinite space-time curvature, and then that's when it becomes a black hole. In other words, it no longer has any size, and it no longer has any form. And so this singularity is called the zero point, or a zero point singularity, okay? So that's where it comes from. And I really understood that in more of a spiritual way than a scientific way. I mean, you can explain it scientifically, and of course it has its definition there, but it also can be defined in a spiritual perspective. So that's why I call the reuniting with the source, which some people refer to as God, or you can also call the source the one. So that's zero point. It's zero point consciousness, which is basically no form. And what we perceive in the universe is really forms. The Big Bang, which I go into in that chapter, and it really all it did was mark the beginning of forms. Okay, and forms, which we identify as the physical realm, the physical universe. But going beyond that, and essentially that's what happens when a star dies, when a star collapses. It's no longer existing in the world of form. It's now entered the world of, it transcends form into the world of non-form or non-duality. And this realm of non-duality is eternal. And that is the source. That is the source realm, or what I also call the frequency realm, from whence everything in the universe of form originates. So everything that we perceive in this three-dimensional realm originates from another realm. And that other realm is the source frequency realm, or the zero-point realm. It has no space and no time. It's pure consciousness. Okay? And that is the zero point. That is what I call the zero point self. It is beyond the world of form. It is an all-pervading consciousness realm, a realm of eternity. And that is when you realize that, that's when you evolve into the zero point self.
Ah, so that's what you're talking about in your book about the next human, like the so-called, you know, evolving human. And, you know, why is it that we are going in this direction? Like, why, you know, is it just part of, you know, God's will, or is it, you know, because of what's happening in the world right now with, you know, corporations and takeovers and GMO foods. And so I'm just trying to figure out how people can kind of put together this evolution and what it means for us.
Sure. Well, the source simply has two movements. The primary movement is that the source can become conscious of itself. And that is the inward movement. That is the return movement. The outward movement, which is the experience of form, the experience of the universe, the doing, so to speak, and learning knowledge, talents, skills, and experiencing life, in enjoying the forms of life and enjoying life itself, that whole experience that we call life and the universe and the physical realm and so forth, that is the outward movement. So now we are coming back into a balanced state where we're experiencing both. We're experiencing both the outward, which is the doing, and then the inward movement, which is the being. And that being is reuniting with the source. In other words, becoming one with the source or returning to the source. It is that return movement. So we're now balancing both. We've been doing the outward thing for quite a while now. And it's gotten to the point where we've become so wrapped up in doing and in the mind and in that outward external surface realm, which we call the ego and the egoic mind, that it's ultimately created a reality, a world where we have a lot of suffering going on. And the suffering, it's reached a point where we may annihilate ourselves as a species because if we've got all these nuclear warheads that are armed and ready, we have all these conflicts and wars, and we have a lot of physical suffering through diseases throughout the world, and poverty and famine and so forth. And so now we've reached a point where we have to evolve or perish. And that's the next human. That's the role of the next human as she and he transform from this egoic perspective of their self into the zero point self, which is the spiritual divine self, realizing that you are a divine being, that you don't need to someone else or something or some form to complete you, that you're already complete, that you're already whole, that you're already divine. That is when you evolve into the zero point self, and that's pretty much where we are now on at the stage of human evolution.
Oh, that's a beautiful explanation. Thank you so much. And as you were talking, you know, about this shift from, you know, mainly doing to now to being, I actually saw an infinity sign in my mind. That's what it feels like, this balancing, energetic balancing. I wanted to ask you about something you mentioned in your book that really resonated with me. And before my illness and when I was in university and I met my, you know, first, who was to be my first husband, I was very religious and kind of, I guess you would call it blind faith. You know, I just believed everything that, you know, my faith told me. But my husband was agnostic or atheist, depending on, you know, the day of the month or whatever he wanted to label himself. But he didn't believe in God, and he was giving me all this left brain proof that God didn't exist. Or at least that, you know, that religions, not so much that God didn't exist, but that religions weren't really what they cracked up to be. And so he's a history buff, so he would, you know, was telling me all this stuff in history about, you know, the Crusades and all the stuff. And I mean, we never got taught that in, you know, Christian school, you know, all the quote unquote bad things that Christians did. And so I was really in a state of shock. And I didn't know what to believe anymore because I only got one side of it growing up, and I had this connection and faith, and all of a sudden it was completely shattered. And so I went kind of godless for a very long time until I succumbed to, you know, my fibromyalgia and my illness, and at the depths of my illness had to ask for help, you know, and said, help me. And then got reunited with my spirit, which I talk about, you know, in my Guide to Healing Chronic Pain book, how that happened that one night. And then now I just feel so much more connected to Source and to, you know, to God and to the universe than I ever did when I was religious. So can you speak a little bit about, you know, this whole religion thing and how, you know, in one way it may be helpful, another way it may be hampering us? It certainly didn't help me in many ways.
Right. Yeah, I understand that completely. I was the same way. Well, religion is very limiting, first of all, because it teaches us that we must be separated according to our beliefs. And when we teach somebody that and teach that divinity can only be found through doctrine, through rules, through dogma, through a faith to an adherence to those rules, which is, you know, dogma, and then it's very limiting, and that limitation is very useful to those in power and who are writing the rules, essentially, or rewriting them according to, you know, according to the way they want those rules to be, because that gives those people in power more control. It's a system of control over the masses, and that is essentially egoic. It enhances and emboldens the egoic mind, because the ego says, because you and I disagree, you become my enemy. right? So that's the cause, that's the motivation, the impetus for the wars and conflicts, the religious wars, and even the terrorism that we have today, which is based on fundamental radical ideas based on religion. You know, still going back to, you know, the egoic power that religion has over the minds of people. So the next human is going to transcend all of that. She's going to understand that it's a very limiting system of control, and that dogma and doctrine is going to impede our evolutionary growth. Because it does separate us according to our beliefs, according to our opinions. What I'm trying to convey in the book, throughout the book, the core message is that we are much greater than our opinions. We are much greater than our beliefs. And there's a danger in cherishing our opinions and our beliefs to the point where we pick up a stone and start throwing it at our neighbor because he or she disagrees with those opinions or beliefs. And that's what leads to conflict in relationships and between people and also between nations. And that's ultimately the reason why we're fighting today. And we have so many nuclear warheads on the planet just because we share a difference of opinions and beliefs. And that's really crazy. It's really a form of insanity because we are beyond that. When we realize that we are eternal beings, we are eternal consciousness, because opinions and beliefs change, throughout time. You know, if you go back and see, you know, where we were just 150 years ago when slavery was common and known in this country and perfectly accepted in many, many states. And so, you know, today it's considered insanity to hold another human being as a slave. So we have to really grow and evolve and bend with the wind instead of standing in rigid defiance and be more open to understanding other people's ideas instead of resisting and, defending those beliefs. Because defending your belief or opinion is the first act to war.
Wow, and how often do we do this as just in the unconscious part of our lives every day? whether it could be, you know, what seemingly is the quote-unquote right belief, defending that, you know, you got to eat organic or you're a bad person.
Right, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, yeah, it can come in subtler and subtler ways. I mean, we may, you know, in our neighbors and, you know, neighborhoods, we may not be fighting about whose God is better, but we could be fighting about whose diet is better or, you know, where did you get those clothes or did you know those corporations are really evil? And then that whole separation thing, it's so tricky sometimes because when we try to do the right thing, the rightness of it starts us on this other path of separation instead of oneness.
It does, because again, that's what's falling back into unconsciousness, which is the egoic mind, and you know, because you are right and that person is wrong, and therefore that the ego. See, the ego thrives on creating an adversary. The ego cannot exist unless somebody is either superior or inferior to you. Or to it, really, not you, because it's not you. You are not your ego. The ego is this concept that you've identified with, and as long as you're identified with that concept in your head, then you are going to see somebody as either superior or inferior based on their opinions or beliefs. So just like you were saying, the example of whether this person is adhering to the right diet that you adhere to, or that they dress differently, or they act differently, or they do things differently. And that's where judgment comes in. And that's when, you know, the irritation comes in. Oh, that person just irks me all the time. And, you know, and this is where conflicts and relationships arise and so forth. And it's not that person is upsetting you. It's your mind's reaction to what they are doing is upsetting you. So you haven't created a space yet in between your egoic mind and your eternal zero-point self, which, you know, mm-hmm. that eternal consciousness. So it really is silly when you become conscious and realize, I can't believe I was allowing myself to get upset over such trivial things. Because
right,
they really
right.
are, they don't, you know, they really are irrelevant and nonsensical. They don't really mean anything on a higher level. They're just little things. You know, and this is what creates anxiety and stress throughout the day, and why people cut people off in traffic, and you know why you're constantly getting into arguments with your boss or coworkers or whatever, little things like that. So the falling back into unconsciousness, which is falling back into the egoic mind, is to create suffering, and that suffering helps to reawaken us to our true self, which is the eternal conscious being that we are.
Oh, well said. And I actually really like that this term that I think I first read in Neil Donald Walsh's book, Conversations with God, and it was, there is only one of us here. Like,
yeah,
who am I really mad at?
In the room.
Yeah.
That is true. That is very true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That really, yeah, it definitely helps me, and especially when I get into that judgmental mode and righteousness mode, which I'm sure my parents would say that I did a lot of that. growing up, yes. Well, and actually, for those of you just joining us on the show, I'm interviewing Jason Lincoln Jeffers, author of The Next Human, and he's a spiritual teacher, and we're talking about the zero-point self, what it is, and how do we get there. If you do have a live question to ask, you can call in at 818-514-1190. Again, that number is 818-514-1190, and just hit 1, so I know that your hand is up. In the meantime, Jason, maybe you can talk a little bit about, in your book you mentioned the hive mind, or I also like to call it the holographic mind or mass consciousness. There's many different terms for it. What is that, and how is it important to us?
Well, Princeton University has placed these it's called the Global Consciousness Project, which began in the late 90s, and these are transmitters that generate, there's about 70 of them. They're located in high population areas around the world. And what they do is they send out random data, zeros and ones, on a quantum level. And they're called generators, random number generators. And they generate these numbers, just random sequences. So when something happens that catches our global attention, such as a tsunami, or such as when a famous person like Princess Diana dies, or when we have an Olympic Games or Academy Awards broadcast, or something like 9/11, then these random sequences become structured. And they have... they have no other explanation for this. The chances of this happening is about 1 billion to 1, but they become structured only during these events. Okay, and this, the only explanation that these scientists, researchers can give, is that there indeed exists a hive mind or a global consciousness. In fact, I give the chart. There's a little graph there on that section of the chapter that shows that our global consciousness perceived the airplane collisions on 9/11 5 hours prior to the actual collision.
That was amazing.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, we were anticipating something looming on the horizon as a species, as a hive mind, 5 hours prior to the event. And so we know that we are connected, and this is actual scientific proof now that we are connected. And more we realize this, the more that we understand that we are a group collective consciousness, then the more that we can transcend the suffering that we have in the world and stop buying into the whole idea that, we are separate from one another. And that separation is really what is causing all the conflict and causing all the suffering on the planet.
Wow. And I also, I think it's really interesting that I, share with my Indigo Crystal kids about this as well, is that we have this myth or belief that, you know, wow, for in order for me to make a difference in the world, I really have to, like, you know, treat all these people or heal all these people or sell a lot of my healing products to all these people or whatever it is. And what I'm understanding is less about what I'm doing and more about who I am and my being that makes a difference in the world. And I especially for the indigo crystals, I noticed that, you know, for them, you know, when they are more centered, balanced, happy, that they just generate this beaming light around them that heals those around them without actually having any professional training in healing. So I feel like that's part of that holographic shift, and that, you know, to be able to for all of us to learn without us actually having to take the course, so to speak.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. They are all there raising the frequency of the planet, because I go into that, the scientific research that Nassim Haramein has done, which merges the Newtonian physics with quantum physics through the biological cell. And he measured the cell, he measured the frequency of the cell in the body, and discovered that it operates with the same fundamental dynamics of a black hole. And so it's that zero point consciousness can be discovered in the biological cell, and when you put all these points on a graph, you can see from the micro small, which is begins with the quantum realm, the Planck measurement, which is the smallest little quark in the quantum physics, all the way up to the macro realm, which is the largest stellar galaxies out there, the quasar galaxies, which are the clustered galaxies. So from the micro small to the macro large, the biological cell is right smack in the center. It's right in the middle. So, and that's where we are. So essentially, we as human beings are scientifically now, it is shown through the work of Nassim Haramein, whom I believe is the reincarnation of Albert Einstein, that we are the data transfer boundary between the micro-small and the macro-large. So from a scientific view, we are indeed the center of the universe, because that's what we do. That is our purpose. We are consciousness becoming conscious of itself. What better seat to have in the universe than right in the middle, where you can observe everything on the macro in the quantum realm through our technology now, through the microscopic telescopes through the CERN project in Switzerland, and what we're doing there on the micro small level, to now the telescopes that can view, like the Hubble telescope, that can view, you know, these galaxies and stars hundreds of millions of light years away. So we have the best view, the best seats in the universe as human beings, because we're right smack in the middle.
Wow.
And so when I learned that, I was like, wow, this makes sense, because we really are divine beings and we just don't know it.
Well, you've explained it very well, Jason. And so our time's running out. I want to make sure people know how to connect with you. And so if you could let us know where to get a copy of your book and what else you offer on your website.
Okay, sure. Well, if you go to jasonlincolnjeffers.com or jljeffers.com, they can find all my information there. If they want any coaching, spiritual coaching, wellness coaching, if you're suffering physically and need some help in that matter, I use astrology as a tool in with many of my clients, for those who, especially those who are searching for their life path. If they want to try to find their vocation, we can help to guide them on that level using life path astrology readings. And then we also offer the the art, which worked on. If you are interested in mystical art or transformational art, we also have that available. So they all have to do is just go to my website at jljeffers.com, and they can contact me directly from there. And then they can also buy the book there on the site as well, The Next Human.
Ah, that is perfect. Yes, definitely everybody check out Jason's site. He has some beautiful, beautiful artwork there. It's absolutely amazing. So Jason, thank you again for your time and just, the wonderful human you are to spread light throughout the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Karen, for having me again. It's been a pleasure and honor to be with you on your show again.
Thank you. All right, and thank you, everyone, for listening in. Until next time, take care, everyone. Bye for now.